Excellent. Daniel Hailu, you are the regional head for MasterCard Foundation based in Nairobi, Kenya, and you are in charge of Eastern and Southern Africa partnership and strategic overseeing strategic implementation and stakeholder engagement in the region. So
Absolutely, that's correct.
welcome to this edition of Dialogue for the Future. And we are thrilled to have you. We would like to have this discussion with you to see how the foundation is coping with the COVID-19 pandemic we have around the world. So we're going to start this interview, which is a discussion, you know, completely simple. Relaxed discussion, which both of us are doing obviously from our home because of the conditions. And this is a series we call Dialogue for the Future. In it, we had some prestigious people before, including the president of Turkey, and we also had the president of Niger some couple of years ago, and today we're having a discussion with you. We in between, of course, we had different as players, and this is the first we're doing focus on COVID-19. So welcome to this first on COVID-19. So for those who do not know about the foundation, of course, MasterCard Foundation is one of the largest around the world. But for those who are listening to us and who do not know about the foundation, please tell us what the foundation is all about, what do you do, and how do you do it?
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. So the MasterCard Foundation is, as you mentioned, is one of the largest foundations today. It's a fairly new foundation as well. I'll start there. So it was established in 2006, and it was it operates independently of the MasterCard company as well. Just something that I wanted to point out. That's something that we always clarify up front. So independent, we have our own board of directors, our own management. So we're not very old. 2006 is not that long ago. Our aim is really focused on advancing education, financial inclusion, to catalyze prosperity across Africa. The foundation also works to support Indigenous young people in Canada. So those are our two areas of focus. Building on our work of the last decade, in 2018, we had I think what I would call a milestone event when we launched our Young Africa Works strategy. So this is the foundation strategy for the next decade, especially focusing on young women to secure employment that they see fit as being dignified and fulfilling. So in a snapshot, that's who we are, young, vibrant, bold.
You know, it's great to hear you talk about youth in Africa, and I will promise, and especially young girls. We'll come back to that. That's, you know, something I work a lot on. We'll come back to that. But starting with the COVID-19, the coronavirus in Africa and your foundation, can you tell us what does the foundation do currently to help address COVID-19 response in Africa?
Absolutely. So the need on the continent is so diverse and substantial. And as the public health crisis evolves into socioeconomic challenges here on the continent, you know, we saw a need for a collaborative and complementary effort from a range of actors. It was clear to us that no one organization has the capacity to tackle this challenge unilaterally. So that was something that I think we landed on fairly early on. So about 2 months ago, about middle of March, I would say, we launched the MasterCard Foundation COVID-19 Recovery and Resilience Program to focus on supporting African communities. It's young people, and as well as young people in Canada and the Indigenous communities, to support them and their needs as it evolved during this COVID reality. And just to point out that these are communities that we know very well from our body of work over the last decade or so. We're currently working with a range of partners on the continent to help meet this need. We're looking long-term, we're looking short-term, and we're being very purposeful as well in terms of how we're going about our work. I would categorize focus areas into two, just for the sake of describing it to you today. First one is you want to support immediate needs that are emerging from the vulnerable communities, frontline health workers, students. So we know that this is something that will have a lot of needs in all the countries where we're working in. So that's the first category. The second one, I would say the largest area of focus for us, is to support interventions that will enable economic recovery, building the resilience of communities, enterprises, and institutions across the continent. So specifically, we're going to focus on expanding access to financial services for micro, small, and medium enterprises, supporting the adoption of digital solutions. We see that as an area that we're very familiar with from our past body of work, and the need for that solution is greater today than it's ever been. And then the third one is enabling the expansion of e-learning solutions. So this is our effort. This is what we're based on. And I'd say 2 months in, we're just starting.
Excellent. And you know, I'll come back to that to see if there is one concrete example somewhere in your market, like Eastern Africa and Southern Africa, you can talk to us about. But in the meantime, I would like to ask a question about your response and your support to countries specifically, if that exists, for them to help meet the challenges, you know, in the public health arena. I mean, how is MasterCard Foundation supporting the public health response in those specific market, the public health specifically?
Absolutely, and so this is actually an interesting point, Amadou. That you know, the foundation's work has not strictly focused on public health. As I alluded to at the start of our conversation, we focused on education, access to finance. This is space for us. These are unprecedented things. The demand for flexibility for organizations like ours, those are in position to support, is essential. So we've pivoted our strategy to focus on this emerging need. So under the MasterCard Foundation's COVID-19 Resilience and Recovery Program, we moved quickly to partner with a range of actors who have experience, influence, and reach to effectively contribute to building robust public health responses to the COVID-19 situation. So I can give you a couple of examples here. There are many, but I'll focus on a few here. So in Kenya, for example, we partnered with the Equity Group Foundation and Equity
Bank.
Yes, Equity Group Foundation and Equity Bank. Okay. And we did $5 million to a partnership that will support the procurement and distribution of personal protective equipments to health workers in public hospitals. So that was, I think that was one of our first commitments to get on the ground here in Kenya. We're also partnering with the Red Cross societies in Kenya and Ethiopia and a number of other organizations to provide essential support to frontline health workers. In Uganda, we're partnering with the Malaria Consortium to train community health workers, raise the awareness of COVID-19 amongst communities. And then if I could just jump back to Kenya, this one is a really interesting one. You know, we're partnering with an entity called Shining for Communities. Goes by SHOFL, to recruit, train, and deploy about 2,000 volunteers that will work to provide door-to-door messaging and screening in informal settlements across Kenya. So these are the vulnerable communities in Kenya. And so we are working with organizations that have the ability to reach at a grassroots level. And those are just a few examples. And if you'll allow me, though, we're not just focusing on outreach or providing equipment. We also see an opportunity here to support businesses in our in the countries we're working in that can actually play a role, participate in the solution. We hear a lot about PPE,
right.
Medical devices that need to be brought in, but there's actually capacity in our countries and our communities to support as well. So in Ethiopia, we're supporting 12 women-owned factories, locally produced protective gear. In Rwanda, we're supporting an organization called Guyan Links to get local citizens involved in basically making protective equipment as well. So all of these efforts are moving quickly to try to meet the needs that are emerging. And all of this to say, you know, this is all over a period of 2 months as well. So we move quickly with our partners to bring solutions to the table that will be affected. Unfortunately, one aspect of the COVID-19 reality that has emerged also as well is the prevalence of gender-based violence.
Absolutely.
We've seen that spike with the onset of the pandemic. So we're responding to that as well by supporting partnerships to deliver psychosocial support to communities and really making sure that, again, these are available to the victims at the nearest points of their need. So just a few examples to give you a sense of the kind of work we're doing. Space.
And Daniel, on that specifically, you know, the gender-based violence, I mean, have you been seeing it across the region, or is it more localized in some countries, and is it more an urban, scourge, or is it also prevalent around inside countries, including in countrysides?
Yeah, so I think we've seen it. I wouldn't say it's isolated to one particular country. And I would say that, you know, the cause of spike we're seeing, is part of this is economical pressure. You know, we're seeing families who are vulnerable already and then being basically pushed across the line. You know, maybe a person in the family loses income and this drives a behavior that leads to gender-based violence. We're seeing it not just in urban centers, we're seeing it widely as well. So this intervention that we're mobilizing on is going to support not just urban centers, but across the country. And we also don't see this as a short-term issue as well. It's important. This is something that we feel that will be relevant and linger as long as the effects of the COVID-19 economic impact is with us. So I think this is a space that supports visibility. And of course, we know very well there's a cultural element to this as well that we have to be mindful.
Well, I mean, I can't commend the foundation more than, you know, I cannot commend the foundation enough and doing work in this space. I mean, if we want our societies to be healthy and come out of this thriving, we absolutely need to nip down that aspect on gender violence because, you know, you cannot overcome this by, you know, abusing and going through fear. I mean, it's you have to spread the love so that you can actually overcome this. Coming back to the topic of economic aspects here we are talking about, because obviously this is a health crisis, but in Africa, interestingly enough, there have been a lag. We've seen the economic crisis first before actually seeing the health crisis, which is now catching up with us, you know, at a rapid speed. But for the longest time, because of the lockdowns and others, you know, there have been the economic crisis first. So in that regard specifically, can you give us examples of what the foundation is doing to respond to the current economic crisis in your region? And also if there's like more long time activities the foundation is undertaking to be able to help the continent be resilient and come back in full force, economically speaking.
Absolutely, and if I may just as well give a disclaimer that, you know, I'm sharing with you, Amadou, the work we're doing, and I'm responsible for Eastern and Southern Africa, but we're doing similar work across the continent. So my colleagues that are based in Ghana, in Nigeria, in Senegal, are also really engaging on similar type of work as well.
But Daniel, let's go back to the question on the economic impact, because as we were saying, this crisis is not only a health crisis. Even though there have been a lag on the continent, you know, it has caught up. We had had first the economic impact before seeing the real health crisis. Now we are both in the health crisis and in the economic crisis. So you had started talking to us about the economic responses the MasterCard Foundation is helping the continent deal with. Would you please go back to that?
Absolutely, absolutely. So medium enterprises, or MSMEs, are key area of focus. Foundation, COVID-19, the role that MSMEs play as a source of economic activity and employment on the continent. So keeping them going is critical in sustaining the livelihood of millions across the continent. We also know that, you know, these enterprises have significantly been impacted by the lockdowns and other safety measures that have been put in place by governments across the continent. So the impacts have basically resulted in supply chains being disrupted, and ultimately market demand for these micro enterprises has shrunk significantly. So we know well that even in ordinary times, these businesses have significant challenges in accessing financing from traditional commercial institutions. So COVID-19 has really exacerbated that reality for them. We're working today with a myriad of partners across the continent, and specifically here on this side of the continent, to deploy instruments that will offer flexible solutions, to offer credit lines during this key period when ultimately, you know, it's about making sure that these businesses are able to stay in business, or at least are able to sustain themselves until they can actually get back into the market. So the need is not just financial either. It's important that we recognize it's one thing to have the actual financing that you need to pay the bills, whether it's the bills for the real estate side of it or your supply chain. But the other one is to actually have the knowledge on how you manage through such a scenario. So we're also offering, together with our funding financing instruments, technical assistance to small enterprises as well. MSMEs need this kind of comprehensive support to tide them over until the crisis is abated. And based on current predictions, you know, that looks like a lengthy period. So we're really focusing on making sure that we're building the resilience of these enterprises so that they can not just withstand this shock, because we suspect that as time goes on, there'll be other reasons that business is disrupted. So resilience really comes into play as a key element of what we're trying to deliver to these enterprises. Ultimately, you know, these supports mechanisms that we're enabling, we're deploying, not only protect, you know, these businesses today, but we also recognize the direct linkage into our broader and bigger strategy around Young Africa Works and ensuring that young people have the opportunity to access dignified and fulfilling work. So there's a strong linkage here in terms of what we're doing in response to COVID-19, but also going back to our Young Africa Work strategy. So I'll give one example for the time being, and there'll be several more coming out. But in Ethiopia, we're working with our partner, First Consult, to secure funding, financing support for the livelihood, to support livelihoods of over 50,000 workers. And this is just one example of many that we'll be deploying across the continent and specifically here on this side as well.
Yeah, and we'll come back to Young Africa Works, but I would like now to turn to education, key for the continent, but also an area in which your foundation, the MasterCard Foundation, has invested a lot. Unfortunately, one of the problems caused by COVID-19 is like children staying home. In many countries, almost all of them, you know, on the continent, children are not going back, are not going to school. And that, unfortunately, has impacted the hard-earned, you know, gains, which in many countries we have experienced for some time now. What is the foundation doing specifically in this area to help cope with this crisis on the education?
So yeah, education is this was our mainstay in terms of the initial set of programs that we were delivering on going back to the first decade. So yeah, education really an area that we've seen the impact and we are seeing the possibility that this impact actually continue now. So I know that countries are managing through how they'll either reopen or reorganize themselves to be able to deliver education. But yes, absolutely a key part of the Mastercard Foundation COVID-19 Recovery and Resilience Program is to enable support for education, not just again basic education, but we're also looking at tertiary education as well. First and foremost, we've stepped up to face the immediate needs facing students in our Mastercard Foundation Scholars Program. We have more than 35,000 students enrolled in Mastercard Foundation Scholar programs. Some of these students were caught very vulnerable with the onset of the COVID-19 emergency. And as a result of the disruption of education and travel, we've moved quickly to ensure the safety of all the students, that their basic needs are catered for, and they could shift seamlessly to online learning where their institution of learning is basically. And so this is one part of it. More broadly, and building on the work we have underway through the Mastercard Foundation Center for Innovation and Innovative Teaching and Learning, we're now looking at how e-learning becomes the enabler that will not only bridge the gap that we're seeing and feeling today, but also becomes an enabler for how education can be delivered in a more impactful way across the continent in the future as well. So the response today on the ground, if you were to say, okay, but what about today? Tomorrow is tomorrow, what about today? So in Rwanda, we're working with the Education Board to offer support for lessons that are taught basically by radio and television. So again, recognizing that when we're talking about e-learning and online learning, we have a severe disadvantage on the continent in terms of the rate of connectivity or device ownership. So being practical here and basically shifting the modality of delivery from physical to one that is relatively accessible to a lot of people, a lot of students, which is again radio and television. In Kenya, we're working with an entity called CAP Youth Empowerment Institute to help deliver training around employability skills for TVET students. And again, being innovative here and avoiding this gap where students stay home or stay away from their learning institutions for 2, 3 months and basically come back and are expected to plug right in and move forward. So looking to offer solutions that are practical and aligned with the realities on the ground, and also keeping an eye on the fact that ultimately we recognize that, this is an area that is a challenge originally just from the resource shortages that basic education institutions face. And now is the opportunity that we feel to really support a transition. And e-learning, education technology are the tools that will enable this to happen. And so it's a focus area for us.
I mean, absolutely critical. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I mean, education is a pillar to, if you want to come back and come back stronger and have a very good bet on the future of the continent, you've got to be doing something on the education. And that's absolutely great. I would like now to have this discussion around the nature of your response and actually what you really think. You've started talking about it earlier, but I would like a little bit for you to expand on it. When you look at, of course, the continent is large and it's 54, 55 countries. So what is, in your opinion, the best approach to addressing the response of COVID-19? Should we be focusing on specific country needs, or is there some Pan-African approach which you think need to be looked at here? And what is the foundation's view specifically on that?
So the Mastercard Foundation has experience working At a regional level, so programs, interventions that are delivered at a regional level. But we've also evolved to a model where we are focusing our delivery mechanism for Young Africa Works to focus on country level as well, country level specific programming. So we have experience in both, and I know that you know, the other organizations that are looking to support, I think, have similar experiences as well. I think, you know, the sheer scale of the COVID-19 reality, as we know it today and as it will continue to evolve, will require the adaptation of flexible response models. You know, in the case of the MasterCard Foundation's COVID-19 Recovery and Resilience Program, we will leverage a combination of country-specific and regional-type programs. Country-level programming allows us to deliver context-aligned, grassroots-reaching interventions. And this is really critical because, again, we're looking to support vulnerable of the vulnerable. And in order to do that, there's a requirement, there's a need for you to have the ability to work at a grassroots level. And that is, in my view, difficult to attain when you're working at a regional level. Having said that, regional programming allows us to leverage on economies of scale as well. And this is obviously a key trigger for making sure that whatever support we're able to provide or others can be maximized. So I shared earlier a number of examples which were country specific, and I specifically alluded to Kenya, Rwanda, Uganda, Ethiopia. So I really focused on the eastern side of the continent. We're currently developing a number of regional programs as well with partners that have regional reach and delivery capacity. And this is the key point here, that regional programs require a different set of expertise to succeed. And so we're working with partners that we feel have that capacity, capability, and reach. And we hope to conclude formalizing some of these partnerships in the coming weeks, I would say. And we'll be rolling those out. Again, just, you know, making sure that we're doing what's practical. We're advising ourselves on the basis of the need, rather than programming on what's comfortable. Because I think if we, you know, in terms of our response mechanism, comfortable versus what's needed are not always the same thing. So, right. So we're stretching, being flexible, pivoting as required, and really adapting to both models as needed.
So now, focusing on the impact of COVID-19 on your foundation's operations specifically, what happens to the Young Africa Works strategy, you know, which is one of the flagship programs you the foundation has been working on the continent? What happens to it now because of the COVID-19 impact?
Yeah. So Young Africa Works is our strategy for the continent for the next decade. So we started the journey in 2018, I would say, and we were just kind of picking up speed, I would say. We were getting into our stride when COVID-19 basically happened, not just in the continent, but globally. So like most organizations, you know, we and our partners have felt the effect of the global disruptions brought about by the pandemic. So that's something that we felt, I think, starting in middle of March, we started sensing. And at the same time, you know, the reason behind Young Africa Works, so going back, you know, to this challenge of not enough dignified, fulfilling employment opportunities for young people. Focusing on that for a moment, you know, that challenge or that problem statement, that opportunity has now got bigger, right? So there's more people today that need access to employment than there were back in March. And there was a lot at the beginning of March, and now it's even more.
Right.
So our strategy is, in our view, more needed today than it was back before COVID-19. So therefore, you know, while the work of several of our partners have slowed down, we're also very encouraged to have witnessed some of our partners pivoting their delivery models to continue the program activities as well. And a few have actually adjusted their execution to address the emerging needs as well. And I'll give one example. This is a really inspiring one here in Kenya, just to be specific. So under the Ajiri program in Kenya, this is a partnership we have with an entity called Trivus TSG. young African developers, code developers, have designed and deployed a zero-contact food distribution application. It's an app, basically, to respond to the really skyrocketing, the massive food relief challenges that we're seeing across the country. So the application is aiding the distribution of food supplies by government at a national level, at the county level as well, and really pivoting and changing, you know, a program that, yes, it could have been disrupted, so it needed to adjust itself. And it is now delivering a solution that is aligned and in tune with the emerging needs of COVID-19. So MasterCard Foundation and its Young Africa Works partners are committed to forging forward. And we will, of course, be mindful of the fact that, you know, the world after COVID-19, when we get there, versus pre-COVID-19, may not look the same, probably won't look the same. So very willing and ready to make sure that our strategy, our programming constructs will ensure they are aligned to and really listening and paying attention to any emerging needs that we need to pay attention to as well. But overall, I would say Amadou, Young Africa Works is the strategy for the foundation for the next decade. We are committed to it, our partners are committed to it, and we're looking forward to really forging forward.
Daniel, this has been very informative, and I'm sure you know, we many who would be listening to you will take, you know, a lot of you know, comfort in knowing that foundations such as MasterCard Foundation is really focusing in not only tackling the current crisis, but also working to make sure that the continent comes out of it stronger and, you know, forges ahead. So, you know, to just wrap up our discussion, I would like to focus this last question on, you know, really a human and personal level, because as leaders, we go very often through crisis. And one of the lessons many have been saying, this crisis have, you know, opened their eyes to them, is on humility. Daniel, are you still there? Ah, we're back.
We're back, yes.
Okay, all right. I was wrapping up our discussions, Daniel. And I can you hear me, right?
Not loud and clear.
Okay, super. So I was wrapping up our discussion, and I really wanted to bring this back at a personal and human level, really. You know, a lot of leaders looked at this crisis and said, you know, one of the things it really opens their eyes on is humility. And I would like to ask you personally, what are some of the lessons you are learning from this crisis, being an Ethiopian, being an African, and being simply a human being?
Thank you, Amadou. So I would say COVID-19 has challenged me, stretched me in many dimensions. And I say that, again, from a position of seeing a scenario unfold, which, you know, I think all of us have looked back to February or March. Anybody estimated or assumed, you know, we would be where we are at this point. So it's been challenging professionally, but in a year, it's also allowed me to take a role on an organization that that is so fulfilling as well. So look, it's only been a few months, and I would say the learning is still happening. When I have a conversation a year from now, I trust it would be a just lengthier discussion, but 2 months in or thereabouts into COVID-19, I would say the first thing that I have stood about myself and my position in this organization, my position in life, is that the need to listen to needs before assuming or assessing has never been more clear. Right, and listening is actually one of the values of the MasterCard Foundation as well. And it's an simple word. It looks like a simple action, but listening means, you know, it's your ability to inform your actions on the basis of what's really needed versus what we may assume is needed. And so an organization that is looking to support communities, institutions, countries, I would say, you know, that has been one of the things that I've really had a chance to practice a lot over the last few months. The other one is humility, I would say, you know, the ability to take in information, process information, and come up with a collaborative approach that allows us and our partners and the communities we're looking to support to land on an approach that is actually addressing the need requires one to be behind one's perceptions, I would say, right? So, in humility is something that we talk about all over the foundation, and you have to live. We've had to live it over the last few months, and I truly believe this is going to, these two points around listening and humility will guide us, and we'll make sure that we stay on the right course as we continue to support communities that are being impacted by COVID-19. Last but not least, I also learned that the flexibility one is required to have in managing such a scenario is something that has a different meaning every day. You know, whether it's changing where we work, and as we speak, we're speaking to each other from our respective. Although again, that's something that is relatively manageable. But as a leader in a location where the need is apparent, sense it, understand it, requires to touch people, to people understand what people's position is. But it's being challenged by this physical back needed now because of COVID-19 reality. So having to work, still move that intimacy, the interactions that one is having with colleagues, partners, is really another one that I feel like has been a learning for me as well. It's not easy. I don't know if it's ever possible for us as human beings to get comfortable with this modality. But again, it's definitely been a learning for me, and I continue to challenge myself not to let this get in the way in terms of the quality of the engagement that I have with colleagues. So that's where I am, but I'm sure if we can transition again here, Amadou, I'll have a few more to share with you.
Absolutely. Daniel Helu, a regional head, MasterCard Foundation based in Nairobi, overseeing strategy implementation and stakeholder engagement in the region. So just heard you mentioned listening. We listened and we heard you, and hopefully all those who will be following us and who follow us would be listening and hearing you. But you also spoke about humility and flexibility. Thank you very much for your time this morning. And it's a pleasure to learn more about the foundation. And we'll make sure to catch up with you in another edition of Dialogue for the Future. Thank you very much for your time.
Great. Thank you, Amadou. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good day.